From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Bend, Oregon, where a home gardener was hoping to triple the size of his garden during the pandemic. What better way to spend the time, he thought. He was staying home. He liked the work, and you might have heard Steve Larimore's story on NPR. He picked up a seed catalog, put together an ambitious order, and then got online and found out that most of what he wanted was already sold out. Tomatoes, kale, sweet corn, sold out. The list went on, and Steve told NPR he was pretty discouraged. He wasn't alone. Home gardeners cranked up their work during the pandemic, but that led to a rush on supplies. And the hope is that things are leveling out now. Interestingly, while so many of us are avid outdoor planters, we've all pretty much become indoor plant enthusiasts now. You know how you used to have that one indoor plant that you would forget to water until the leaves got brown and cracked? Is it just me? No, it's you. Well, now you suddenly love fiddly fig and bamboo palms and rubber plants and snake plants. You take care of them like they're your new pets. We all do. Where do we go from here? Let's have some fun answering your questions and getting your experiences on what you've been growing, especially during the pandemic. It has been boom times, and I want to know what you're growing or what you've got indoors, if your plants are doing okay, and what you're interested with, especially growing from seed outdoors here. One of the best is Veronica Volk, a reporter, producer for WXXI, always with great advice for me on indoor plantings. How many do you have? How many indoor plants?
I think I'm up to 55 plants now in my house.
55 plants.
Yes, most of which were acquired in the last year. Much like a lot of people, I think, who are kind of getting into plants. So we can talk about that too.
Do you have any room to like walk around in there?
Oh, plenty of room. They're all on stands. They're hanging from the ceiling. We have a lot of shelves. It's great. It's like a jungle in there.
I love it. Benjamin Harrigan is the founder and lead farmer at Thoughtful Growth. Hi, Benjamin.
Hey, how's it going?
Very good. Great to have Petra Page Mann, co-founder of Fruition Seeds. Hi, Petra.
Hello.
Great to have you back. And Lori Bricolo, CEO of Bricolo Tree and Lawn Care. Hi, Lori.
Hey, how's it going?
It is great. I do want to ask all of you before we kind of jump in on your individual specialties here, just kind of like following Veronica's point. I mean, she's got 55 plants, which that's the actual number, I think.
That is the actual number. I count them when I water.
I have a bunch. I've got a room, like it's kind of like a relaxed room. It's sort of just very calming. It's got awesome plants. I love it, and I never was good at this. But I wonder how your own sort of outlooks on what you do or your lives have changed at all in the last year, especially with the pandemic. Petra, what about you?
I feel like this hypothetical thing that I've been saying for years is no longer hypothetical. For years, and we grow seeds and share seeds. For years, I've been telling people, you know, these are seeds, but really what we're sharing is transformation and the capacity to seed yourself in so many ways. And so it's not no longer hypothetical any longer, where it was always, you know, for years people would say, oh, gardening, it's a nice hobby, and we don't hear people saying that anymore. People know these are our homes and these are how we feed ourselves, and it's a huge, huge joy to be joining people, not just in gardening, but in growing ourselves.
Honestly,
so
Petra, I mean, people who've heard you for years on this program might have thought, is she really that? Can she really think the way she thinks? She's kind of whack. And it turns out you were right about all of this. Just took like the worst circumstances to find out, but you were right. You were right about all of this. There's something really sort of
right.
There's something foundational about growing and staying connected this way. And we're going to be talking to Petra about what Fruition Seeds, not only what they're doing, but what they've seen in the last year. Lori Bricolo, what about you? What has changed, if anything, for you and Bricolo Tree and Lawn Care?
What's really been exciting is the trend of people connecting with nature and becoming bird watchers in their own backyard, and now they want to buy plants for pollinators, and they want to attract more birds, and they really want to have a much better understanding of their environment and how they can have that balance in their own yard. And it's just really exciting. The other is the edibles, and people have just gotten crazy about the edibles and adding them into their gardens and the fun of picking raspberries. What's been for me new is I am not a houseplant person. I don't have a single houseplant because I think of that as housework, and I like to be outside. And so the challenge for me has been learning about all these new trends and the excitement of these cute little different ficus and bamboos, all these gorgeous succulents. And there's just so much to learn, and we are stocking them. And it's amazing the craze on people having to have those as little pets for themselves.
That's so true. It's amazing. For the first time in my life, I'm like actually watering consistently and not killing indoor plants. And Veronica is so proud of me. Benjamin, what about you? What's changed for you?
I mean, a lot's changed. I think there's just a different, like has been said before, our interaction with nature has been emphasized. We're realizing how it fosters us, and that goes along with community too. Like we're connecting with folks in a different way. I think with folks being in isolation or having to stay in their houses, it means relying on our neighbors to sometimes get us the things that we need. And just through those relationships that have been built as a result of COVID, we're just seeing an emphasis on the things that I've always really cared about, and the other folks on this program have cared about too, which is growing healthy, nutrient-dense food locally.
Veronica, you wrote about this for City, and can you just give us a sense for, I mean, did you just decide, I want to write about my life, 55 plants?
Well, you know what, it's funny, because to some extent, yes, I noticed that not just me, but a lot of people that I knew were expanding their houseplant collections and also getting into gardening in a big way in the last year. And I knew it had something to do with, you know, the pandemic shutdowns and people being quarantined. But then also we saw in Rochester a brick and mortar rare plant store open up in the city. And I kind of wanted to explore a little bit about what it was about this moment that made people turn towards plants, planting and growing and growing food and growing these trendy plants. So, I mean, essentially, it was basically this perfect storm of factors. You have the quarantine shutdowns. You have people who are unable to go outside as much as they want to maybe access nature outdoors. Or you have people who are losing their social connections and losing that sense of community. Like we talked about how plants can foster a sense of community, whether you're trading seeds or trading planting tips or buying and selling plants from each other. And what I found was this really crazy online community of plant people in Rochester that were on Facebook groups and on Instagram that had found a way to reach out and connect with each other using this hobby as a way to connect. And that was one of the main drivers, I think, of this plant boom, at least locally and maybe even on a broader level when you see plant influencers on Instagram and really like a plant movement as a trend. People were connecting with each other. They were making friends.
I love that there are plant influencers on Instagram, because of course there are.
Of course there are. And it's trendy. I mean, like, what's more beautiful than a lush green monstera against like a minimalist backdrop? It's just so Instagrammable. It's awesome.
It is made for the Instagram era.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And I know you've got some sound to share with us.
I do. Yeah. So as part of reporting on this story, I did talk to Matthew Del Sesto, and he's a researcher of therapeutic horticulture at Boston College. There's an entire realm of research into this relationship between people and plants, whether that's your indoor plants or your garden variety plants. And he talked to me a lot about the benefits to that relationship.
Most significant is of just a sense of meaning and purpose. Another being culture and the kind of connection we can get with plants. One that also comes up often is just the sense of physical exercise. I think sometimes we even underestimate the kind of focus and attention towards plants, the sense of contribution in a world that, you know, maybe often seems distant and out of control is really, really key right now.
Now, he brings up a lot of interesting points in there, but there is multiple research that shows that just interacting with plants will make you feel better on a biological level. There are actually studies coming out of the UK that show that the bacteria in the microbiology of soil can be linked to releasing serotonin in your brain. There are studies of hospital patients improving faster if they have a view of greenery outside of their window. The psychological benefits are endless. But there's also a cultural aspect to this. You know, he talked a lot about, I know specifically, just personally, my partner is Italian, and he has memories of his grandfather planting and growing tomatoes in their garden. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. And that, you know, that sense of connection to your culture, to your community, and also to the food that you're eating.
I really appreciate so much of the connection and just the focus, the notion that requiring ourselves to be really in touch with something that is growing and living is really valuable. And honestly, for me, having more plants indoors now, I kind of joke that they're kind of like indoor pets. I don't know that that's the case, but there's a real connection and requirement to do that. That is really kind of strangely satisfying. I mean, do you feel that way?
Absolutely. And I think there are, you know, there are proven instances of that. But, you know, when you take care of a plant, it gives you feedback in real time that you are doing a good job. It grows, it blossoms, it produces fruit or seeds or flowers. You can see that the way that you are nurturing it is you know, providing it with everything it needs to grow. And I think in the last year, people felt like they really needed that. They needed to make that contribution. Not just to, you know, their homes, but to the natural world and to the world in general.
I'm not going to keep Veronica the whole hour because we are going to transition to a lot of outdoor stuff too. But I want to let listeners know if you've got questions or comments or want to share your own sort of pandemic growing stories. I mean, Patrick just wrote to me and said, growing, pandemic, weed. I get it. I hear you, Patrick. But you know, if you want to share your thoughts on what you've been up to and frankly, whether you've run into a challenge finding what you want to grow. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Connections at WXXI.org is the email. I saw a story a couple weeks ago, a link on Twitter, Veronica, that said, like, indoor houseplants can be problematic. And I'm like, I'm not even clicking this.
I cannot. Don't even want
to
know.
Don't ruin this. Even
it's true,
this.
Though.
I know everything can be problematic.
Yes.
What is problematic about indoor houseplants?
Well, I think that one of the reasons that it can be seen as problematic now is because, like any good hobby, there are levels of exclusivity at this point. And, you know, a lot of the rarity of certain houseplants has created an inflated financial market for those houseplants. For instance, plants that would have been easy to acquire, to grow, to propagate before are now costing a little bit more money. And that is going to exclude people that maybe want to get their hands on some plants to grow that they always have. You mentioned the story in the beginning about the gardener who couldn't get the seeds that he wanted for his garden.
Yep.
And that's, you know, that happens. And it's sad when it happens because then you have people being pushed out of this hobby that maybe shouldn't be.
Yeah, and I'm being sort of, I actually didn't even click on that story because I just didn't have the emotional energy, the bandwidth to understand why my new hobby is a problem. But I do take the point, and I don't know what necessarily a solution is in this mode.
I don't either, and you know, this, I will say that I don't know as much about this as maybe somebody who could speak more eloquently on it, but I do think that when you have a trend like this that has explosive popularity, you create room for people to be exploited. And you also create a lot of pressure on people who have been growing, selling, you know, trading plants for a long time. And, you know, not to mention the fact that there are now online plant sales happening between countries. I don't even know enough about the universal aspect of the plant trade to get into that. But I imagine that it creates room for exploitation as well.
Can I ask our guests on the phone if they want to weigh in on that too? Benjamin, what do you think about all that?
So, yeah, I did a little bit of reading about succulents because I became interested in succulents myself, even though I've mostly only grown food. And from the little bit that I found, it seems like because of this boom, there's not just only an effect on people possibly being exploited as a result of it, but also the ecology of the spaces where these plants come from. So a lot of the succulents that have been popularized, their home is in Africa, and because of this huge boom and becomes suddenly these things are worth so much. We're seeing ecological environments be affected for the harvesting of the plants and the seeds themselves in certain spaces. And so because there's not a ton of regulation in this area, it is harming certain ecological environments. That's just what I gathered from the little bit that I took from it. And it did steer me away from succulents, but I have certainly a lot more research to do there.
Yeah. Lori, anything you want to add there?
Well, I think it's important to know the source. Who's your grower? And making sure, one, that we're sourcing locally and that they are, in fact, propagating the plant themselves and legally, because there's a lot of patents out there. So this is really important. There's a lot of research that goes into plants, cultivars, and things like that. So I want to make sure that who I'm buying from is really a legitimate, licensed nursery or greenhouse grower.
Petra, what do you think?
Oh,
can of delicious worms. Biopiracy is so real. And, you know, quinoa, for all the quinoa that's grown, sold, enjoyed around the globe, Peru has enjoyed none of that economic benefit. And so many of these communities of succulents and so many other houseplants, what we now think of as houseplants, where they're endemic to, there's some very real neoliberal toxicity happening. And as an antidote, you know, for example, I do have ludicrous quantities of houseplants. And I grew up in my father's garden as well as in his house, which was essentially a conservatory. And I'm so grateful to have grown up around all these plants. And I have some jades and other plants in our home now that, you know, are cuttings from plants that I grew up with, and all of the plants in our house have come from a person or a place. Very few of them have I actually paid money for. So I think there's a very real opportunity here to build culture and community rather than just increasing revenue for these large corporations and just building a trend, but actually like learning how to propagate plants, sharing them with people we love. And then every time I look at every single one of my plants, I see the reciprocity in every single one of them, in the lineage, and just I'm connected to all of these other people through these plants. So an invitation, an antidote to colonization. Just share them and generously. And yeah.
Well, and Petra, it's interesting you bring up quinoa. That is something that I actually thought about, you know, that it became, you know, quinoa was sort of ubiquitously one of the hot superfoods, maybe a decade or close to two ago. Who knows what time anymore. But, you know, then you started to read about, yes, it's really good for you, but yes, there are costs to this, and unfortunately, unfortunately, the people who have to grow it and the communities where it's from don't often benefit. So, I do think these questions are valuable to ask, as painful as it is. So, Veronica, I'm sorry I went there, but I think it's important. I mean, I think this context matters.
You have to address it, particularly because it's such a booming trend. You want to know the impact that you're having. And I think so many people that are getting into plant culture are thinking about like all of the benefits. You know, it releases oxygen into your environment. It makes you happy. You get to see greenery. But you always have to take into context like how to do this in a sustainable way and how to do it in a way that doesn't negate all of the benefits that you're experiencing.
Before I let you go, can I ask you what you love the most in terms of the plants that you, I mean, like what are the, either the most interesting or the most pleasing to you?
In terms of like which plant species are my favorite?
Yeah.
Gosh, this is so hard. I love plants with variegation. I love my Crimson Queen Hoya with its stripes of pink. You know, I love variegated plants, and I think that's actually pretty common in the plant community to like those sort of unique, you know, genetic mutations. It makes them a little bit more hard to find, but all the more special when you grow them well.
Benjamin, are there favorites to you?
Honestly, I grow veggies. That's what I love to grow the most. I grow a few flowers because of their positive relationships with bringing in pollinators and sometimes fighting off the nematodes that can affect root systems. But my passion has always been growing food that I can eat afterwards. I like the idea of having a thing that I can put in my body, and it just makes me feel more connected to the plant life. So for me, it's radish and lettuce and kale and tomatoes, peppers, things like that are my favorite. And recently, here at Thoughtful Growth, we've been growing things that have a short date to maturity so that we can get to them right away and then plant something else and have something grow right away.
I dig that. What's a good example of that? No. Don't look at me, Veronica Volk. That wasn't like a dad joke pun.
I dig that, he says.
You know what? Now that there's people in studio, I see the way you react to my dad jokes. That was not an intentional dad joke.
Okay.
It just happened.
Mm-hmm.
I do dig it. What's an example there, Benjamin?
The ones that I just gave, as far as like greens and lettuce and radish, you can harvest usually with before 50 days have passed. Mm-hmm. And you can have a beautiful plant that's delicious. I eat them raw. Sometimes I come out in my garden in the morning and eat a raw radish just to wake me up a little bit in the morning because it's got that spice to it. It's a beautiful interaction. But, you know, my interaction with tomatoes, just pruning the tomato plant and caring for it and making sure it's in a space where it's not going to get too much moisture by taking off the lower leaves, just the interaction with the plants on a daily basis is really what brings me that sort of natural high that was talked about earlier.
I love that. I had a great uncle who intentionally every morning swam in 60-degree water because he said it was invigorating. He should have just been eating raw radishes like you to kind of wake you up.
Maybe do both at once.
There you go, man.
Who knows?
Laura, you said that your plants are outside. You know, does anything sort of strike your fancy on some of what we've been talking about with the indoor stuff?
Well, I think the whole trend with pollinators is really, you know, everybody's loved, you know, the butterflies and wanting now to attract the bees and all that. But there are certain plants that attract a lot more pollinators than others. And I'll give you an example. There's this, it's called Pincanthium. It's a mint, mountain mint. It's native, so the focus again is on native, and it earned the distinction of pollinator plant of the year a couple of years ago. And I had a client looking for pollinator plants, and we walked by several native plants that all had, you know, little bees and tiny little flies and all kinds of pollinators that people don't even realize are there and are significant. And this one plant was so busy. It was just, and he said, oh my God, there's a party on that pollinator plant. So I now call it the party pollinator plant. And it's just amazing the activity. You can just sit there and watch the buzzing and all the activity, and your mind just completely relaxes and rejuvenates with the activities in the garden.
Mm-hmm. I had a beautiful experience just recently with my strawberry plants, actually, because they've all flowered out. People forget that, you know, the veggie plants also create flowers and attract pollinators. And we had so many bees all over our flowers, and they came for a short amount of time. But it was a beautiful little experience knowing that we were providing for them and they were helping pollinate for us. And I just want to mention, my favorite flowers for pollinators are definitely marigolds and nasturtium, especially nasturtium, because it's delicious. It's got that spice that I like. It's also, you can eat the flowers and turn them into wonderful things. And Petra, I just want to say, I'm always smiling whenever I hear you talk, and you're a huge influence on me. And I source my nasturtium and my marigolds from Petra at Fruition Seeds.
All right.
Oh, shucks. Thanks for taking care of our great, great, great grandbabies.
Look at the connections here.
My pleasure.
Petra, to your earlier point about, you know, how we source even indoor plants, Shelley writes to say, when I was finally able to safely visit my folks a few weeks ago, my mom had propagated her snake plant for sharing. As she passed it along to me, she noted that the snake plant was 61 years old, first given to her when she and my dad were first married. I'm taking extreme care of my snake baby. Thank you for today's program. I thought of you and the point you were making there. Do you have a favorite indoors there, Petra?
I am a sucker for agaves. For as much as I endeavor to not be spiky in other ways in my life, I'm really fond of tiny plants indoors in pots. Thank you for asking.
I love that. Veronica Volk, as we let you go, Angela wrote in to ask, do 55 indoor plants attract insects?
Yes. That's the short answer. There, you know, not all pests are bad. I will say, at least in my own personal experience, I haven't had horrible pest problems. But you do have to be careful about the effect that those indoor plants have on your pets, children, other people. And there are, you know, plenty of natural remedies to help keep those pests away. When in doubt, quarantine your plants when you bring them home from the store.
Okay. Hey, great work on this. This is always fun.
Thanks so much. You know what? I'm happy to be kind of a vessel for this conversation, and I'm really interested to hear the second half of the hour because I'm really excited about learning more about all the plants, particularly the gardening stuff.
Yeah, we're going to be moving outdoors after our only break. You can find Veronica's work on many, many venues as a reporter, producer for WXXI, but also contributing to City Magazine and City News. Thank you.
You're welcome, Evan.
I love
seeing
you in person.
I know. It's so good to be back in the studio.
Oh, there's a real intimacy to having people in studio. I felt that way with Michael Lasser yesterday, and I love seeing people in studio. And listeners, we're going to be doing more and more of that as time goes on. Let's take our only break of the hour, and we're going to move our attention outdoors to growing during this pandemic next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, Lakea Sinclair joins us. She was 19 years old when she turned to a county legislator for help after a mass shooting. That county legislator later sent her a nude photo. She was disgusted, and now she's calling for ethics changes in Monroe County and more accountability. Lakea Sinclair, Wednesday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. You might have heard NPR's recent coverage of the planters, the growth during the pandemic of home gardening, not just people who, you know, sort of are doing it really passionately, but also people who've been sort of kind of like semi-interested in their home gardens and then just dove right into it a year ago and thought, all right, this is where my attention's going to go. I'm going to tackle long-lost desired projects or expand different beds and do a lot of cool stuff here. And what they found at times was it was hard to find certain seeds or certain things you wanted to grow. My hope is that's changed, but let me ask our guests what's most in demand from their sort of their part of our world. Petra at Fruition Seeds, what has been most in demand in the last year to 14 months or so?
So much of everything, but especially intriguingly, I mean, things you might expect, like tomatoes and peppers, but also zinnias and sunflowers, which I've just loved, and also kale. So a classic combination of things we might expect and not.
But kale is sort of always popular, right? I mean, is there anything that's...
I guess it depends.
It depends?
I see it as being quite a polarizing vegetable.
Oh.
There's people that love it. There's people that don't love it. And then there's people who don't love it but want to not seem like... You know, it's not trendy to say, I don't love blue skies. So they'll say they love blue skies and they'll say they love kale, but actually they much prefer to not be bothered with kale, in my experience.
And is there anything right now that should, for example, for listeners like Andrew who wrote in asking, is it too late to get going with in 2021 with this? Should I have started 2 months ago? Is there anything that should deter people
not too late.
I'm going to let Benjamin jump in. Go ahead, Benjamin Harrington.
Oh, it's definitely not too late. Oh, it's hair again, but that's totally okay. What we could grow now is lettuce, arugula, watermelon, spinach, dill, cilantro, basil, parsley, squash, broccoli, carrot, beets, radish, turnip. One of the sources that I love is Petra's site on Fruition Seeds. You can go ahead and click on Plant Now and then click on the month you're in, and then you can see all of the options of seeds that you can be growing this time of year. And, you know, it doesn't end that fast, especially if you're growing a short date to maturity crop. A lot of people are focused on having really big tomato plants right when the season starts, but not everybody has a greenhouse to propagate them, and not everybody bought it from a greenhouse before it got sold. You can still start stuff and have it be little and grow and still produce beautiful fruit. And really, if you're new to gardening, that's really what you should be focused on, is your interaction with the plant. You don't need the most high production possible. You need to have that experience of the lesson that you get once every season and get in on that, you know? Have that experience if you haven't had it yet, because it's truly a spiritual and beautiful one.
Petra, you want to add to that?
I could, but Benjamin, that was so beautifully said, and truly we are just at the beginning of the season. Basically, the only things that you've missed the boat on is starting your own tomatoes, starting your own peppers and eggplants, your own ground cherries, and starting from seed a lot of the perennial, really slow to grow plants. But apart from that, there's basically everything. Get ready for the litany. I'd be here for 10 minutes telling you everything else that you can still plant. So yes, we've only just begun.
And I've got a couple things I want to sort of clear up with Lori in a second here. But Petra, can I just also ask you if you have felt like the last year has connected you to more I mean, I'm going to use the word customer, but really I know you build relationships with people that that Fruition works with and serves. And has that been intensified in the last year? Have you heard from more people, and has that grown for you?
Yeah, absolutely. We went from, you know, my mother loves to say it's always nice to feel relevant, and she's never wrong. She's rarely wrong, and she's never wrong about that. And so we went from having a community of people that, I mean, new people find us, find Fruition Seats all the time, but suddenly it was this, we couldn't lock the door. We couldn't close the door. There was no door. Everyone wanted everything that we had to share and just mind meld instantaneously as if it was the most important thing they'd ever done in their lives. And arguably, it might have been. And so it's where for a lot of people in the pandemic, for some of us, it was this really different time of like eerie quiet. And for Fruition, it was the exact opposite of needing all of the hours plus 27 every day to be really accompanying people and making sure that they were creating the kinds of gardens and communities in their lives that would allow them to grow joyfully beyond the fear and the scarcity that makes you garden in a pandemic moment. And so, especially as we're beginning to take our masks off and gather again, I'm so curious to see if how ardent the fever pitch is, where so many people just were so hungry for everything that we had to share. And it felt so wonderful. I feel hope that everyone has this experience of having this thing that they love, that then they get to share with the world, and then having the world actually want it. It's a beautiful gift.
Yeah, it's under the category of good problems to have when the demand when the demand is that high. And you know, Lori over at Bricola Tree and Lawn Care, I mean, maybe similar in some ways, slightly different in terms of some of the work that you do. But I mean, I can go back to last year and I remember how difficult it was to find anytime soon people who are available to do tree work, to do lawn work, to do anything that needed done outdoors. I've got friends who wanted to put in a stone patio, and it's like, well, we can get to it in like late 2022. It's amazing how much demand there was. You know, Petra experienced that. Benjamin's talked about that. What was the demand side like, and where is it now for you, Lori?
It's certainly been challenging because there is definitely a lack of employees to get the work done. The people that are in the industry are really committed. So what I'm finding is that, an example today, I went and met with a customer and I brought him a bunch of flowers because they wanted them and they wanted us to plant them. But I said, we can't. We can't get them in. If you want annuals, I'll be happy to bring them, place them for you. And then you can plant them, and which is exactly what I'm starting to see a lot more of, that trend where we plan for people, we do the design, and they are doing the planting. And it's great because I love giving people assignments and showing them what they need to prune and things like that. And so the work is getting done. It's just getting done differently. And that's how we are spreading our expertise and assisting people to get, you know, just get out in those gardens. And the other trend, though, that I'm going to say I'm seeing is this instant gratification. We've always kind of seen that before, but this year, people are buying plants way too early, way before Memorial Day, running out of vegetables and flowers and all of that, actually running out of baskets of flowers 2 weeks before Memorial Day and really having to run around to different nurseries and pick and select. And the growers are just insane trying to keep up with a new wave of crops so that the demand is there. But if it's in color and it's blooming, it's gone. It's off the shelf. And it's really hard to keep replenishing. The education portion is something that you really try to show people to be a little more patient and to plan out their entire season of flowering and sequencing. So It's certainly been fun. I love being busy, so it works out really, really well.
I'm with you, though. I noticed some neighbors who usually wait till Memorial Day. It was like mid-May, and they were like putting hanging baskets out, and I was like, no. Hold on here. Yeah. There's like an agreement here on this street when we're doing that, and if everybody's doing that early, so yeah, I got out there real fast after that because I felt like, well, they're all going to be gone.
You were right.
Yeah, and it turns out I was almost right. I just got my foot in. I also have to just, as an aside, you know, Petri used the term perennial. Can we just establish, Lori, was it a conspiracy to confuse new gardeners that the terms annual and perennial were used? Because they're pretty much the same word, and they mean the opposite things in gardening. What is going on here? Why did we do that?
It's always been something that most people don't understand at all, actually. So I love working with novice gardeners and just going through the process of annuals are going to give you that color all season long, but then they're going to die out and you'll have to replenish them. In perennials, you're going to get some long season blooms, but they're only going to last maybe 4 to 6 weeks, and you have to plan out the constant changing of the seasons, which I think blending both together, one, it saves you on having to do a lot more work every year with the annuals. So planning and putting them both together so you get these pockets of constant color, but then you also get this change in sequencing. And when you get that sequencing, you also get different kinds of birds and insects and, you know, just so much more activity happening in your garden.
Talking to Lori Bricolo, CEO of Bricolo Tree and Lawn Care, Petra Page Mann, co-founder of Fruition Seeds. Benjamin Harrigan is the founder and lead farmer at Thoughtful Growth. And we're talking about what they've experienced during the pandemic in terms of their work, the interest, the demand, and what they can help you with. So if you've got questions or comments on gardening, we can probably squeeze in a few more before the end of the hour. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And again, the email connections@WXXI.org. We had a few listeners asking about shade and sun requirements. So let's just go down the list. Benjamin, if you've got a particularly shady situation at home, you're going to be limited in certain ways, we know that, but when it comes to growing, especially some of the crops that you're talking about where people want that quicker gratification, that quick turnaround,
sure.
Are you limited if you've got a lot of shade?
No, you're not limited at all. In fact, some plants, when you're doing companion planting work, such as like a tomato plant, it might shade out the plant that's next to it, which would be fine if it's a lettuce or if it's a full cilantro. But for example, my favorite thing, honestly, to grow, and I put it in my smoothie almost every morning, is arugula. Arugula loves shade. So I've got a bunch of arugula growing right behind my house where it's a little bit shady, because you can have high yields of arugula in shady spaces. So arugula is always my go-to for a shady area. But most lettuces, they don't want to be in full sun because they'll often bolt. There's only a couple types of lettuces that are bolt resistant that you can also focus on if you have a sunnier area. But a lot of those, I would definitely focus on lettuce or arugula if you've got a shadier area, that's for sure. I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention in this conversation that there's a lot of people that don't own their own space that are kind of left out of this talk here. And I think one of the focuses for Thoughtful Growth and for folks in my community is working to make sure that people can address those barriers that stop them from being able to grow their own food and have that interaction. And so one of our focuses here at Thoughtful Growth is giving away soil and plants and seeds to folks that can't afford them themselves. And we've held a couple events to give away 12 yards of soil and thousands of veggie plants and seeds. And I just wanted to shamelessly plug that on the 26th, we will be giving away potting soil to anyone that can't afford their own potting soil. Please come to 93 Maxwell Avenue, 14619. On the 26th, and get some pots so you can grow some food yourself. If you're renting, when I was renting just a couple of years ago, I worked out an agreement with my landlord that I could grow in the ground. But a lot of times, if you work with your landlord, they might be able to let you put a couple pots outside of your place, especially if you're in a house.
Yeah. So first of all, that's not a shameless plug. I'm glad you did that. And I'm going to ask you to do it again. The date and the address and the time. Do it again.
shameless in that I had no shame when I was saying it.
Well, that's okay.
93 Maxwell Avenue, Rochester, New York, 14619. I'm so sorry. So that's 93 Maxwell Avenue, Rochester, New York, 14619. And that's going to be from 11 to 2 on the 26th. So if you were thinking about getting a planter with soil in it, but you feel like it's too expensive for your family's budget, please come. I've got plenty of lettuce seeds. I think it's a tendency for a lot of people that grow food to buy their seeds in bulk because it's inexpensive, but also the seeds only last so long. So I ended up giving them away. Same goes with some of the compost that I've ordered. I end up giving it away, and it's turned into events because so many people, like Petra was saying, the door swung wide open, and it got exhausting setting appointments. So now we do events every month, and it'd be wonderful to meet you all and talk to you there. If you have any questions about growing your own food, I'd be happy to answer them.
That's a great idea. And I think you're also making an important point for renters who might assume that you can't, or that you don't have the green light to do certain things. My experience is that many landlords, their concern is just making sure the property is well cared for. And if what you're right. doing is going to add to curb appeal and all of those things, which planting always does, I think yep. you'll be surprised more often than not that they say, yeah, go for it. That sounds good. I mean, go ahead.
I'm sorry. If they stop you and say that they're not interested, tell them that you're willing, when you do end up moving out, if that happens, that you'll reseed it with grass if they like to look at grass. You know, just ensure them that you'll make sure that it turns into what it was before if they don't like what you do. And that's going to give them a sense of that you understand that it's about their property value while still allowing you to have that sovereignty to be able to, you know, feed yourself and nourish yourself with your own plants, because it's an unbelievable experience. And my goal with Thoughtful Growth is to make sure that everybody in Rochester that wants to have it can.
Benjamin, there was one morning when I was making my morning smoothie that I grabbed a wad of what I thought was spinach and I made the smoothie and I nearly spit it out because it was arugula. I love arugula. I love arugula, but if you are expecting spinach and you get arugula, that's like thinking you've got chocolate and you've got pumpernickel.
You're not wrong. My wife doesn't understand how I eat arugula smoothies, but I love it with a date and some berries and a banana. It's like one of my favorite things. It really gets me going in the morning.
Some of us are just wired differently, man. That's awesome. I love that. Petra, what would you say to listeners who've inquired about shade and are concerned about growing, you know, planting seeds and don't know the conditions they need to make it right?
Here's the generalization. If you have shade, you can grow phenomenal leaves, whether it's plantains or, you know, lilies, whether it's, hostas, lettuce, parsley, all the things that Benjamin mentioned, you can grow extraordinary leaves because leaves are solar arrays, right? They only need to photosynthesize for it to make more of themselves. It takes a lot more energy to flower and then fruit. And so something that's fruiting is going to struggle in the shade a lot more than something that can create its own solar arrays, the leaves. So yeah, there's a fun little generalization for you.
Let me read a couple of emails. Kim says, thank you, Evan, for your guest for today's show on gardening. And I want to give a quick shout out to Petra's Seed Starting Academy on Fruition Seeds website. Watching her instructional videos brought me such joy during the pandemic. And now I am looking forward to a garden full of abundance this summer. Thank you for spreading Aww. Community and joy. That's Kim in Rochester. Thank Aww. You, Kim.
If I might, I just wanted to give a little shout out to the Flower City Noir Collective. They're doing a lot of incredible work empowering people to grow their own food, and especially youth in the city. It's run by Tanya Noel and Kristen Walker. And also AfroSteam Kids, who I hosted a workshop for just the other day. That's run by Ronke and Ruben, and their efforts enrich children's education through fun and culturally relevant activities. And they explore issues of food apartheid through their group called the AfroSteam Kids Garden Club. So I just wanted folks to know about that. If you've got kids, if you're in the city, if you're renting, and you really want your kids to have these experiences, please connect with Thoughtful Growth, with AfroSteam Kids, or with Tanya Noel and Kristen Walker at the Flower City Noir Collective. We want to empower families to do this sort of work because it's a beautiful experience for us. I know that for me, it's created a lot more mental wellness for me and my family and my community, and we want the same for you.
All right. And Nancy writes to say, Evan, I'm reading Braiding Sweetgrass, a book by a botanist, indigenous woman, and an author.
Wonderful book.
It seems really relevant to the conversation right now. So the book is Braiding Sweetgrass. Thank you, Nancy, for that recommendation. Sounds like our guests endorsed that as well. So listeners, maybe some good summer reading for material for you there. And on the subject of growing in shade, Lori, on the plant side, listeners curious, best plants for mostly shady spaces?
So there is really many, many to choose from. But the big question is it dry shade? Is there competition with roots? Are you going under a tree? Or is it a wet shade area or, you know, nice and loamy? So knowing the soils is extremely important in picking out the types of plants. And working with native plants, so woodland types of plants, knowing that deer are going to be a nuisance possibly, and understanding which plants are not going to be devoured by the deer. So there's a lot that goes into it. And so it's hard to say, you know, what are my favorites, but I do like to show people what I call assertive plants. Things that are going to do fairly well, like geranium, perennial geraniums, cranesbill. And there's a few different varieties, but the native or native var, and I want to use the word native var because there's a lot of cultivars of really interesting, beautiful plants like purple coneflowers that are double, triple types of flowers, and yet they do not let the pollinators in as easily to get the nectar. So a nativar is a plant that has been improved on, maybe a little more interesting color, but it still serves as the same function for the beneficial insects that are out there. And the one I'm just talking about, perennial, cranesbill, geranium, there's shade and sun-loving areas, different types that, and they not only have different blooms, but they also have gorgeous fall color. So I'm always looking for something that's going to function for the environment and then be assertive enough to really take over a space so we don't have to weed it. And then also is adaptable enough between some of the dry parts of the season and some sun and shade versus having to be solely in one area. So those are my favorite assertive plants, and there's actually a whole bunch more that I'm not going to list right now.
All right, and going down the list here, Henry is asking about coral bells, wants to know if they will grow in size and what is eating his coral bells.
So the coral bells, heuchera, which is a fantastic shade plant because it's all about leaves. Benjamin was talking about leaves and the different colors and textures that you have, and some dainty flowers. They can handle some dry shade, but they do need a little extra water. It could be slugs, and most likely that's what he's, if you don't find the actual insect on the leaves and the leaves are being eaten, most likely it's slugs who are feeding at night. But occasionally bunnies will come along, or woodchuck, so, you know, might be deer resistant. That's a great plant that the deer don't eat, but something else might just come along and chop away and completely devour the plant right down to the nubs, and that can be really frustrating as well. So I hope that helps.
Henry, good luck. Yeah, I hope that helps there. Some questions about soil quality. Benjamin, Petra, do we need to be concerned if we're doing do people need to test soil pH? Is that ever an issue to success in new planting? Benjamin?
Yeah, I would say that in the beginning, when you're first growing things, that's something you want to take into consideration. If you're building a healthy soil food web, as it's called, and you've got worms in there and you've got those microorganisms, a lot of times that neutral pH will be good to you and you can grow an assortment of different things in it. However, there are things like blueberries that like that higher acidity or lower pH, which can be kind of confusing. But if you've got a really beautiful soil food well built up over time by adding organic ingredients rather than tilling your soil, which can kill the microbes in your soil, then you can end up growing things that have a little bit of a range of pH in the same soil.
Petra, anything to add there?
Pay attention to whether you have lead paint or not. and whatever, especially if you're in an urban area, what kind of the history of that area is. It might not have always been residential. And so that is a really humbling. I believe Cooperative Extension has some maps available of like neighborhoods and just other keys for Rochester specifically to just be more aware of. So you may not want to be just tilling in your soil. You can always create raised beds, bringing in additional soil. But soil testing is always crucial. I always think of it as like, you can have a party on a pontoon boat on the Great Barrier Reef. You can grow a garden without soil testing. But have you really experienced the Great Barrier Reef? Do you see that food web that Benjamin is talking about if you're just drinking a martini on the pontoon boat on the Great Barrier Reef? I would suggest not. So go ahead and soil test. And so much is illuminated. It's so much beyond pH. And then everything that you do from there will just make so much more sense. And we have a beautiful, pardon my self-aggrandizing this, we have a blog. Fruition has a blog, our Soil Testing Made Simple blog, to just walk you through the process.
I was just going
to
ask. That's perfect. So so as we wrap up, so if you want to find that blog with Soil Testing Made Simple and so much more at Fruition, where do we find you online, Petra?
FruitionSeeds.com.
FruitionSeeds.com. Benjamin Harrington at Harrington. Boy, I'm going to keep doing that. Benjamin Harrigan at Thoughtful Growth. Where do we learn more about you, Benjamin?
You can learn more on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thoughtfulgrowthfarm, or on our website, thoughtfulgrowthrock.org.
Lori, it sounds like you don't need any help, but if people want to find you, I know it's busy. Where do they find you?
Come to the Garden Center, or go on to Facebook and Instagram. And just remember, when you're trying to look this up, it's Brocolo with an O, not an I, even though we love broccoli.
Broccoli with an O. Lori, thanks for making the time for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Benjamin Harrigan, thank you very much for the expertise.
I'm very happy to be here. Grow some food.
Absolutely. And Petra, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Such a joy. Happy summer.
Hey, check out Earshot with WXXI. Veronica Vokes hosting a new podcast coming out. Launches on Friday.